You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The race is on, and even with the start of the 2020 Formula One season continuing to be pushed back, there's still plenty for us to talk about. One of the big stories in F1 right now is whether or not Max Verstappen will have the machinery to fight for the World Championship when this year does finally get going. But why is everyone so confident he's a title winner given the right machinery? I'm your host, Ed Straw, and joining me for a deep dive into all things Verstappen are Scott Mitchell and Mark Hughes. So, Mark, what have you been doing to get your motorsport fix during this period of confinement?
mainly writing about it, but yeah, also just watching old videos. I love Can-Am from the late 60s, early 70s. That's a big thing of mine at the minute. I'm going through phases. So, yeah, stuck inside. I'm just watching old stuff like that and digging out stuff to read. But other than trying to recreate Grand Prix on my bike when I go out for my one allowed bike race, cycle. not really had a fix as such.
When you go out on your bike, is it an old Riley Chopper? Because I saw you posted one of those on Twitter the other day.
Yeah, I'm a big thing on Riley Choppers. I was in a documentary on one, actually. But no, I haven't got a chopper anymore. It's just a normal road bike.
Why were you in a documentary on one? This is a fantastic tangent.
Yeah, if you go on YouTube and type in Peddling Dreams, it's a history of rally, and the last sort of 20 minutes is all about the chopper. And I'm interviewed on that about why the chopper was such a fantastic bike. Because I'd written something when the chopper was reintroduced a few years ago, 10 years ago or something, I'd written something in a newspaper about the chopper, and I think somebody traced me from that. So,
okay, there we go. Well, it's that could be a good topic for a tangential podcast at some point.
The technique for being quick on a chopper is exactly the technique you need in racing cars. You need to get the weight on the front as you turn in; otherwise, you're just slow.
Exactly. Well, Scott, you've got quite a lot to live up to now because Mark has taken us down all sorts of interesting cul-de-sacs with that. So what are you doing? Obviously, you're in Scotland as ever. I can see we're connected by computer, obviously by FaceTime. And I can see you're in a Swedish football shirt.
Yeah, I'm in Swedish. I'm not in Scotland, Ed. I'm in Sweden.
Did I say Scotland?
You did, yeah.
It used to be the same before the continents parted. It used to be the same.
Yeah, I was going with a Pangea interpretation.
You've gone full Pangea there, Ed. Well done. I am out in Sweden, not in Scotland. I've been pretty much similar, looking back at some older stuff to get my fix. A mix of some retro. Like retro videos and DVDs and stuff online, and one of the things that I've just done, which may be slightly misguided, is I've just spent quite a bit of money downloading a bunch of reviews from Duke. So I'm now watching. I've got all of the 1990s British touring car seasons because I'm a bit of a super touring fanatic, and I'm going to go and see what they've got like 70s and 80s wise from F1, so I can actually. I've now finally got the time to properly relive those eras, so this might be my opportunity to do so.
Yeah, it's a great time to look back through some old stuff. I went through a bit of a phase of looking through 1930s Grand Prix racing because I just read Richard Williams' excellent new book about Dick Seaman, the Mercedes driver of the 30s who lost his life just before the Second World War broke out at Spa. And there's not so much footage, but it's just a fantastic era, that the Mercedes and Auto Unions, just astonishing cars, great legendary drivers.
You know what there is footage of? As had just been advertised by Mark Hughes, there is footage of Mark Hughes talking about bikes on YouTube. I've found it while you two were speaking. I can see it on my screen now. So that's amazing. So if anyone thought that was the weirdest bit of fronting from Mark, that he was just sort of making this really bizarre and very niche lie up, I can confirm it is 100% true.
We'll know what happens when there comes a point where we read a story about, if this confinement goes on for a few more months, someone being chased by police riding a Riley chopper around a park somewhere in the northwest. We'll know who's cracked. Anyway, enough antics. We shall get on with the matter at hand, which is Max Verstappen. To do this, we're going to try and break down his abilities into various different categories, just to make it a bit more manageable, to get an understanding of his strengths and weaknesses. Some of the categories are a bit interconnected, inevitably, because that's how being a Grand Prix driver works. But we're going to try and break it down. So I think the obvious place to start, this is kind of the prerequisite of any great Grand Prix driver, is speed. So Mark, you know, basically here we're talking about single lap pace, qualifying pace, just two pole positions in Formula One for Max, but to be fair, limited by a car that has very rarely been a threat on Saturday. So how quick is he?
Yeah, I mean, qualifying wasn't really the standout part of his game, even as he came through the junior categories, winning was. But we're only talking about the last little shavings of putting a lap together, the critical moment. He's raw, the underlying speed, the thing that was winning him those races was, and is fantastic. As he's become more experienced and involved in the discipline of F1, and an F1 weekend, he's been able to put all that together. So you say only two poles, he would argue three because of Mexico last year, but you could be the fastest driver of all time, which interestingly Jenson Button believes them to be. Not quite sure how JB's got the full list of candidates for that accolade, but still. And you'd not score any poles at all if you're not in a contending car. So, no, there's absolutely no question. This is one of the outright fastest drivers that we've ever seen.
I do think it's a thing that's often misinterpreted about him, because as you refer to, when he came in with Toro Rosso in 15 alongside Carlos Sainz, it was the Sundays that really stood out. And I think people kind of have this sort of lazy shorthand. It's a young driver, therefore they're stunningly quick, but they don't put together the races quite so well. But yeah, that seemed to be that thing, as you said, getting those last few shavings of qualifying that was the key bit. And I think actually it was probably his time alongside Daniel Ricciardo, who's a great qualifier, where he really kind of properly got on top of that, didn't he? Because you saw him initially, Ricciardo was doing better. And then, you know, 18 and 19, on average, Verstappen was sort of a tenth and a bit ahead of Ricciardo. And we know how fast Ricciardo is. So that's kind of the trajectory he's been on. What do you make of him, Scott?
Yeah, I think I agree broadly that it's his ability on a Sunday, we'll get into that a little bit more, that stands him out. On the qualifying side, I watched quite a lot of Verstappen's onboards last year during qualifying, because obviously especially when Red Bull and Honda were not quite at the races, the focus tended to be on Mercedes or Ferrari if they happened to have their act in order that particular weekend. So maybe Verstappen didn't quite get the airtime, especially in the first third of the season. And it was quite interesting. It was a trait that did continue throughout the year. Max was driving quite scrappily at times in qualifying, just never quite piecing it together exactly the way you wanted. I remember him getting caught out in Canada and at Suzuka, where Alex Albon basically matched him. And it was a very good qualifying performance from Albon, one of probably his best one lap pace wise in his Red Bull stint in the second half of the year. But Max wasn't very clean on his lap. The hairpin and the chicane, just those sort of crucial braking phases where he just didn't quite tie it all up. And when he puts it together, he's stunningly fast. And I'm not saying here that he's a messy qualifier or a bad qualifier or anything like that, but I wonder if it is that element of because he isn't constantly fighting for poles, because he's been used to having to try and almost do the impossible and outperform his machinery in over one lap in the Red Bull Renault era, that it's just that little bit of, okay, well, the best I can do here is maybe nick third or fourth, and the worst I'm going to be is sixth. So I can afford to, you know, step over the line a little bit because the consequences aren't going to be that bad. And I wonder if Red Bull and Honda put it together to the point where he is fighting for poles more regularly, I suspect that he will start to refine that area of his game a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think we did see a few occasions where he's left potential poles on the table, shall we say. Mexico 18 is obviously one that stands out, where he should have been on pole, although he made up for that on race day. And you can even go back to Monaco that year, where he had every chance of being on pole. He's been really quick at Monaco, right from this sort of first free practice session there for Toro Rosso. He was quick, but because he stuffed it in FP3, he wasn't in the mix. But do you think that point is valid, Mark? That whole thing about... yeah, if you're going to be P5 or P6 anyway, you might as well take a few more risks to try and get second row.
You can go into qualifying with a bit more freedom. The last little shaving of discipline, of absolutely understanding everything to the nth degree, because you know that the other guy is going to be on the other side of the garage, is going to be taking pole from you, like the challenge that Hamilton has had for the last few years, for example. You go in, I guess, with a slightly different attitude, as Scott says. You can be a bit more free, I guess, and sometimes that works. It allows you to pull the best from yourself, just as an improvised way. But sometimes it just means you're a little bit untidy.
I think we'll probably get into his sort of the temperament and management side of his game a little bit more separately, but. One thing that you mentioned there, Ed, about Monaco in 2018, when he really did biff it and messed up a big chance. One thing that I think that did teach him was that it reminded him, I think, afterwards, especially once he had a heart to heart with his dad Jos, he is really quick. He doesn't need to go out and prove it in every single session. And I think we have seen in general, especially from that sort of late 2017 to early 2018 sort of period in Max's Red Bull career, we have seen, as a general rule, him become a lot better at managing those sessions and just making sure that he peaks at the right moment, rather than going out and having that sort of, I guess, slightly youthful exuberance of just wanting to go out and nail it all the time. You know, a Grand Prix weekend is a big process. You've got to make sure you peak at the right time. And Verstappen has got better at that. Just because there were mistakes last year, that doesn't mean that he's still this sort of reckless qualifier or anything like that. He has definitely improved, but I just think there is more for him to find.
Yeah, certainly. There's no doubt Verstappen's a quick driver, although as he's only 22 still, there's probably still a little bit more to come in terms of nailing that, nailing it on Saturdays consistently. But it'll be different when we see him in a consistent pole contending car, I think. And I think he'll be ready for that that challenge. Let's move on to racecraft, Scott. Now, this is kind of the ability to execute a race well as the whole wheel-to-wheel aspect of it. Now, looking at what was happening in races, Max had a shaky phase at this first part of 2018. He recovered from that and avoided the risk of becoming a bit of a high-class Pastor Maldonado. And of course, that Monaco shunt was part of that, although that wasn't in a race. So how far do we think he's come in terms of putting all that together? We know he was a strong race driver from the off, but he has just become more and more formidable in this aspect, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think when you look at sort of a driver that is capable of going out there and absolutely maximising an opportunity on Sunday, he's up there with Lewis, I think, for that. Because one of the things that obviously Hamilton has, it's crazy that Max is only 22, considering how long it feels like he's been around and how many Grand Prix he's actually competed in. But he still doesn't have anything like the experience that Hamilton has. And you just see it, the way Hamilton's able to overcome pace deficits and that sort of thing. But Verstappen is getting there, because we've just seen him. He doesn't have that many races under his belt where he has had the opportunity to win the Grand Prix. And the way he has been able to do it, or the way that he's been able to, for example, in Hungary last year, sort of come close to winning it, and requiring a real bit of brilliance from someone like Hamilton to actually overcome it, I think Max has just gone from strength to strength. His tyre management was something in the Toro Rosso years that they worked really, really hard on. And as he's become more mature and more experienced, and I think stopped maybe panicking in race situations, he's just become a lot more measured in the way he does it. That doesn't mean that he's lost his his raw speed or that sort of aggressiveness. And I think Christian Horner has said on more than one occasion, when you look in your mirrors and you see you've got Verstappen behind you, you know he's going to try something. He's not going to stay there for long. And he's kind of the opposite of a driver like, shall we say, Kimi Raikkonen or Valtteri Bottas. When he gets in, when they get into a position where they need to really hustle it now and they need to be the ones to make the difference, I just don't really see them having the dynamic nature or the creativity to get something done. Verstappen's more in a Hamilton or Ricciardo mold there for me.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to that ability to execute races, you mentioned the time management thing at Toro Rosso. I think that was born out immediately when he was promoted. If you think back to the 16 Spanish Grand Prix, his first race for Red Bull when he won, which was a strategy that was based on doing one less stop than Ricciardo. And we were all thinking, oh, will he have the management ability and the tire life to get to the end of the race, and he did. And I think that mark is kind of shows how that ability to bring everything together on the Saturday, certainly in terms of just approaching the race sensibly and bringing in these other more three-dimensional aspects has always been there. So, and that's only going to have got stronger over the years, and it was pretty damn good, probably better than the majority of drivers immediately.
Yeah, I mean that first race with the Red Bull, he was also very smart in how he was managing the battery as he was under pressure from Raikkonen in the last phase of the race. He's just got, I think, being so naturally quick comes so easily to him that he just has that spare capacity that he's able to think through what he needs to do. And in terms of racecraft, the actual wheel-to-wheel stuff, he's fantastic at. He's always in the right place. He always knows where to be on the track. It's just instinct. That part of his game, I would say, the wheel-to-wheel stuff, I think he's maybe, I mean, I'm sort of hesitating to say it, but I think he's maybe even better than Lewis at that.
He's got a little bit of the kind of early era Lewis Hamilton, should we say, that ability to nail those brilliant moves under braking. That's actually an area that we haven't, Lewis hasn't had to do that so often in recent years. He has pulled off some key passes, thinking 2018 in particular. There are a few moments when there were some key passes in races, Russia, Monza, for example. But yeah, Verstappen's had a bit more cause to do this. And I guess because he's often been in a car that was stronger on Sunday than it was on Saturday as well, he is generally kind of coming through. But I don't think it's a big call to say that he could potentially be stronger than Lewis on that. We just haven't really had the chance to compare like for like with that.
One of the things that I find really interesting with when Max has to go wheel to wheel with someone is it's almost like he's done the groundwork, hasn't he, in terms of establishing his reputation, to the point where I think some of the moves he puts on people, he does ask a bit of the person he's overtaking to give him some room. But it's almost that, like, that ferocity of reputation means that when someone has Verstappen behind him, they know that if he does make a move, they're going to have to move out of the way. You said, Ed, when you said he's sort of risked becoming a high-class Maldonado, I seem to remember there being quite a few occasions with Pasta where he'd be on the wrong side of that line. He would put his car in a place where you need the opponent to give you a massive amount of room, or to basically go above and beyond to get out of your way. I don't really feel that Verstappen does that. I feel that he basically just, I don't think he really puts himself in a position where the other guy has to move or they crash. It's more just that it's that perfect blend of precision and aggression.
Yeah, and I think he's eased up on the thing he did a bit earlier in his career. He was guilty a bit too much of moving around in braking zones, which he shouldn't really have done. And we did see, for example, that famous thing with Kimi Raikkonen on the Camel Straight at Spa, when he kind of moved across on him. But also that kind of willingness to push it to the edge in a title fight, that can be quite important at times. You just need to know when to deploy it. But he's never been overawed by who he's racing with. And you think right the way back to that first season in 2015, some very strong race drives, but was it Austin? I remember he had a really strong performance, and I think, if memory serves, in the damp, diced with some of the big guns. And you know, he's somebody who, when it comes to a race, I think some drivers you look at and think they're not necessarily 100% convinced that they belong in this company. Whereas I think Verstappen, from the first moment he sat in a Grand Prix car, he didn't feel any of that. I think he felt, yeah, I belong here because I've been prepared for this for my whole life.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. He's just he's born into racing, and then this is just a different form of racing from that he did before he got to F1. I don't think he's overawed by the fact that it's F1. I don't think he's ever been starry-eyed about that. You know, he's brought up, his dad was an F1 driver, so it's not a big thing for him, I think. And that's part of that. It's part just confidence in his ability, but it's also part, this is the world I've always been in.
And we see it as well in what he's doing at the moment with all the esports events that he's part of. We know that he's an avid sim racer. You know, all he wants to do when he's not racing an F1 car is race a car in some form. And if that's virtual, then he gets behind it. And he did a race, an online event a couple of days ago that I caught a little bit of. And it was a lobby filled with professional drivers and experienced iRacing competitors. So this was about as good a lobby of pro drivers as you can get in GT machinery around Barcelona, the full Grand Prix circuit, and everyone's basically within a few tenths of a second, except for Max, who's on pole by half a second. It's like even in virtual form, the guy's just on another level to most competitors.
Yeah, I think he lives and breathes racing. I think the influence of his father, Jos, is an important one. I think we'll probably come back to him a bit later on, but it's good to get a mention of his influence in early. Let's move on from racecraft, which I think probably you can argue is perhaps the absolute strongest part of a very strong all-round game. Let's go on to technical ability, Mark. Now, so this is talking about how he contributes to evolution of a setup, feedback, the way he works with the team on that side and the engineers. I guess everyone will have heard his onboard radio. He's often complaining about power delivery and this kind of thing. So we know he's a sensitive driver, isn't he? He's not just sort of one of those guys who gets in the car, does a lap time, and kind of doesn't know how he's doing it, is he?
Yeah, that's right. He's got a really clear-headed understanding of the dynamics of driving, and you can hear this from his explanations afterwards when he's describing something that's happened during the race. And I think that clear-headedness extends to his understanding of the car's dynamics. It's all part of the same thing. And you hear his communication with his race engineer, Jim Pirro Lambiesi. The responses to the questions are always very simple and concise. There's no messing about. And I think they work very well together, those two. They're very similar in how they communicate. So I think this natural feel for the dynamics of speed combined with that easy, unforced communication is great for an engineer, and the engineer understands the dynamics, but the driver feels them. And if you get that balanced, which I think they have, you go fast, you know, consistently, relentlessly fast.
The interaction between Max and his engineer is phenomenal. They've got that relationship is right up there with Hamilton and Bono at Mercedes, where you've got the understanding of what a driver means when he says certain things, and also the ability to tell him off as well. I don't think that can be understated, because it's very easy to look at drivers like Verstappen and Hamilton and think, they just get you know, smoke blown up their backside and told how great they are and all of this. But actually, sometimes when the going gets tough and they need to focus, they're venting quite a lot over the radio, or they're moaning about something in particular. And every now and again, you just hear Max get told, all right, mate, just shut up and get on with it. And that, I think, is really valuable. It shows that there is that long-standing connection and respect there. And I know from speaking to the Honda guys as well that from an engine technical point of view, the feedback that they get, they absolutely love what Max is telling them, because it's so specific and precise. But it's also it's something that they can then apply to what they're doing trackside and what they're doing back at Sakura. Honda absolutely love Max. It's not just because he's a top driver, a quick driver, or got them a podium and wins last year. It's because he is genuinely facilitating better development from the engine side.
I think in that regard, he's the sort of sensitivity and the feedback is a bit like what someone like Kimi Raikkonen offers. But what Verstappen offers on top of that is a slightly broader operating window, should we say, because he's quite an adaptable driver. Yeah, he's got a way he wants it to be, and we'll often hear him complain about power delivery or particularly in the Renault era, kind of the performance of the car under braking, because that was an area where they really struggled with the Renault engine to kind of optimize everything, get it consistent. But at the same time, you know, when he's complaining about those things, he's not letting it inhibit him in the same way. It's interesting, the whole thing about the dynamic you mentioned, Scott, with the pit wall. It's actually slightly reminiscent of what Red Bull achieved with Vettel and Rocky, his race engineer, Guillaume Roquelin, which I think has never been matched by what Vettel's had at Ferrari, where I feel he's been kind of not kept in that window. He's been allowed to kind of let the emotions run away with him. Whereas at Red Bull, Vettel was always very well under control, and the pit wall was able to, and Rocky was able to kind of keep him in that focus. So I think we should probably not underestimate Red Bull's capacity there as well to kind of understand how to operate their drive as well. Perhaps something that Ferrari could learn from. Do you think that's a fair comparison, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely I do. I think Seb's been sort of left to find his own way at Ferrari, and yeah, they plug somebody in to fulfill the role, but it's not, it seems almost as if it could be anyone. It's like a light bulb, and there's no real effort being made to build up that rapport. So yeah, it's absolutely one of the crucial points of a driver's career, is to find that connection with his race engineer.
And perhaps that indicates, I think Verstappen's good at building that himself, because he had a very good relationship with Chevy Pujolar when he was at Toro Rosso, who was his race engineer. Chevy now at Alfa Romeo, isn't he? But I feel like almost Vettel needs that relationship to be built in his direction. It's kind of a little bit more on the race engineer side to do it, whereas I think Verstappen's better at driving that and building those connections, which is so important, because it's so much, when we talk about technical ability, it's about communication and understanding, isn't it? You want to know what a driver means when they're saying something, and you want the driver not to kind of go beyond their brief, shall we say, because the driver does not engineer the car. So you want the driver to give, and Gary Anderson always says this, you want the driver to give clear, understandable feedback, not just kind of jump several phases and straight away say, oh, I think we need to do this to fix this, because the engineer needs that kind of feedback from the driver, who, of course, for all the data in the world, the driver is the sort of central point through which every part of that Grand Prix car machine is felt. So the driver does still have a big part to play in terms of interpreting that.
Yeah, indeed. It's all about what the driver feels. So it's all very well if the numbers say one thing, but if the driver is not feeling it, it doesn't really count for anything. And if the driver is able to communicate clearly what he wants, then you know, that takes you automatically in the direction you need to go quicker.
I think Max has benefited from that sort of elevated number one status within Red Bull. You mentioned, Ed, before that the progress that we saw Max make alongside Ricciardo was obviously very significant. And I think in many ways there are a few better drivers to have when you're a younger driver than someone like Ricciardo, because he's not only is he damn good on track, but he's very good at building that team around him. And one of the things that I think Max has done really well over the last 12 to 18 months has been turning that reputation as sort of Red Bull's golden boy, because he's really quick. He's obviously the future of the team if he stays there. And it's almost like this assumed authority and responsibility within the team. But that actually means nothing if you don't behave in the correct way. If you just basically throw your weight around and just like, well, you know, I'm the only reason you guys are winning races, then people, just because you're revered because of your talent, doesn't mean that you're respected as an individual or liked as an individual. But I the way I see Max interact with his engineers and with the Honda side of the garage and the Red Bull side of the garage, coupled with the extra responsibility he has to lead the team in terms of development and feedback. Because last year, we already knew last year that Pierre Gasly wasn't going to be quite on that level. And then as Pierre started to struggle through the year and then eventually was replaced by Albon, who was a full F1 rookie, so the emphasis is placed more and more on Max being the one leading that feedback. And I think he's properly lent into that. I think he's embraced it. He's enjoying the confidence boost that you get when you're the one being asked all of the questions and it's your feedback that's being taken on board to dial in on setups and the way to go. So I think that has not only brought out the best in Max, I think Max has also sort of put something back into it.
Yeah, and I think also Max has got, he's got a good level of intelligence as well, which maybe doesn't always get talked about as much as it should do. And certainly, particularly when it comes to kind of racing intelligence, because he's pretty much been in race cars slash carts pretty much from being in the womb, really, isn't he? And of course, we should say, actually, on that level, you know, he's basically the... He is bred from two very good racing drivers as well. I think he's kind of... That builds that kind of intuitive understanding because, you know, you've got to be a bit careful with phrases like intuitive, but I think there's so much of that understanding of what a car's doing, how that relates to the mechanical side, etc., that's just been kind of hardwired into him through that really early experience of when you're doing all that early karting, etc., that I think it comes so naturally, whereas I think some other drivers who maybe aren't exposed to that need quite so early don't kind of take all that and sort of pack it down into their subconscious. So they have to kind of make all the connections between what the car's doing a little bit more consciously. Whereas I think Max, you can put in a car, he feels it, understands it, and can digest that and propel it back at the team very well. Well, let's take a brief break and then we'll be back for more on Max Verstappen. Well, welcome back. We're going to continue with our odyssey through the qualities of Max Verstappen. Next up, the category is mental strength. Now, Scott, critical factor for any elite sports person is the kind of mental strength. This covers confidence, ability to recover from mistake, that whole mental robustness that the great performers have. Do you think at 22 Verstappen has that temperament and that mental strength to do it at the very top level week in, week out?
I think he's getting there. I think he's definitely a lot more well-rounded than he was 12 months ago and definitely more than he was 2 years ago. So you see as he gains more maturity in life, I think that is translating into just a little bit more maturity in his racing game. We still see the odd moment of sort of arrogance or petulance or just immaturity, whatever you want to call it, that Mexico last year when he obviously got himself into hot water after qualifying because Bottas had crashed ahead of him and he had seen Bottas shunt but kept his foot in through the last corner. And he improved, I think he improved his lap time, but he didn't need to because he would have been on pole anyway. But he said afterwards, he was asked a lot of questions about it in the press conference, understandably. And even though there was a video emerged of him going past a yellow flag panel just as he goes into the final corner, but you can clearly see in the footage his head is turned completely to the right, basically looking through the corner, not looking at the light. And he said in this press conference that he said that he'd noticed that Bottas had crashed, but he didn't react to it. At no point did he say he had seen the yellow flag and ignored it. But what then followed was he was fundamentally in the right. But what followed was just this inability to really understand why he was being asked the questions he was being asked, and just getting, you could see he was getting a bit ticked off that he kept being asked about it. And his answers just got sort of less and less mature. And he was digging his own grave almost, because he was basically creating this image that he was being irresponsible when he actually hadn't been irresponsible. And it was almost like this us against the world mentality that him and his dad have had since karting. Sometimes that comes through in a negative way because he feels like he's being ganged up on, and he feels that he acts a little bit like, if you're not on my side, then that must mean you're against me. And sometimes that doesn't work in his favor. By and large, I think he's become much, much better at keeping his emotions in check and channeling them in a way that brings out the best in him. Like in Austria last year, when he turned the frustration of botching the start into an incredible charge through the field and late pass on Leclerc for victory. But sometimes it does manifest itself in a negative way.
Yeah, there's very occasionally moments in races where you feel, if he's a little bit kind of behind where he feels he should be, sometimes that can cause problems. Spa's a good example last year where he didn't get a great getaway, and then he launched that move on Raikkonen at La Source, which was a legitimate move, but it was not the percentage play, and ultimately that led to contact that ended his race. So, I mean, that's sort of still being hypercritical. I think in most situations he's pretty strong in this. It's more the outlier situations where sometimes that little bit can break through. But I think this aspect of his game is only going to get stronger because he is still only 22. So, you know, Lewis Hamilton was 22 when he made his F1 debut. This is going into 2020 will be what Verstappen's... Yeah, this will be his sixth season, 2020, when it finally gets going. What do you think about this, Mark? Would you say there's still a little bit of room for improvement, or do you think he's there?
Yes, but if we're talking about core strength, the core belief in yourself and the ability to just bounce back from defeat and difficulties, he's obviously exceptionally strong. And that through the long term of his career, that's going to be the important bit. The pieces that you both talked about, where the petulance comes out because he refuses to, you know, back down. Yeah, I think that is just maturity, and it is it's less frequent now than it was, and he's still a little bit there is a little bit of he can react emotionally to a situation, but I wouldn't say he's as extreme in that regard as somebody like Sebastian Vettel, who's not a youngster. So you might still see that trait in flashpoints now and again, just as you do with Seb. But I think the core strength, the core belief, is as great as Hamilton's in himself. You know, it strikes me as a greater core belief than, say, Seb has in himself. I think sometimes Seb seems to doubt that he should be at the level that he's at. Other times when he's got himself into a confidence cycle, talking about Seb here rather than Max, but it's just to illustrate the contrast. He soars, but then you can quite often see in Seb sort of up and down in performance, but I'm sure is related to his confidence. You don't see that with Max. Max is always, regardless of whether things are going well with him or badly for him, his level of personal performance is always right at the top.
Yeah, I think you can kind of that contrast is quite meaningful, because I think sometimes with Vettel, you'll see him kind of try to flat out deny that, to sort of play down the fact he's made a mistake, and he'll kind of try and play the part of the guy who's got the sort of superhuman self-confidence and etc. But you're not totally convinced by it. It's like he's trying to force himself to be that. Whereas Verstappen, just feel no matter what you throw at him, he knows how good he is. In that regard, that makes Verstappen a bit more of the kind of extreme sports person, doesn't it? That's just got that absolutely rock solid self-belief, whereas perhaps Vettel doesn't quite have that in the same way. Perhaps because he's almost a more normal human being, shall we say, but we're talking about extraordinary performers at this level. That's what makes a difference. I do think that 2018 run of races, when he had those mistakes, you know, Australia was a bit scrappy and made mistakes there. China, he went off trying to pass Hamilton in a race that he could have won, that then Ricciardo went on to win. The Azerbaijan collision with Ricciardo, the Monaco crash. I think he came out of that period stronger. I think, as you alluded to earlier, Scott, he realized that actually he's quick enough that he doesn't need to be at 10 tenths or 11 tenths all the time. Certainly doesn't need to be at 10 tenths in FP3 at Monaco. And I think that's probably allowed him to stop kind of reaching for things too often. And I think that experience probably made him a stronger driver. And we see a lot of drivers go through this. We saw Vettel had his phase of mistakes, I mean, that he did then get on top of in the Red Bull domination years, but then since have come back for whatever reason. Lewis Hamilton had a few shaky moments after his initial brilliant start. He had some mistakes and difficult times. So we often see this with drivers, don't they? They have to go through a little spell where they kind of tune themselves and get everything together mentally.
Yeah, Lewis had it for most of 2011, didn't he? I mean, he had stuff going on in the background in his life, but again, it was the same sort of process, this sort of annealing of the stresses that you are placed under as a Formula One driver in a top team.
And it all comes down to how you respond to it, ultimately. You mentioned there that he did really get on top of it after that start in 2018, but he was also slightly petulant through that process. How many times was he asked if he needed to sort of change his approach or the way he was viewing things? And he got really irate at that. And I think, was it in Canada, he threatened to like headbutt or punch someone? It was a joke, wasn't it? But it was one that was laced with a bit of the real world frustration of being asked these questions all the time. But then by the end of the year, he admitted that he had changed his approach. He said that he'd spoken to Jos, and you know, that he'd been reminded that he didn't need to be on the limit all of the time, and you know, you're quick enough, and that tallied with what we saw from that change almost immediately from Canada onwards. And I think Canada 2018, he didn't have his was Canada 2018 when he didn't have his sort of entourage with him. And he was just sort of, he's not always swamped by family and friends, but it's just that another little example of sort of, as he's got developed through his career, is becoming that sort of self-sufficient person and becoming dependable on yourself. And we haven't seen him, okay, he's had a few moments, but he definitely hasn't lapsed back into that early 2018 spec Verstappen, who definitely would not be able to fight for a title now.
And there was a little bit in that process of Red Bull making sure that Max was standing on his own two feet and slightly distancing himself from Jos, shall we say. Not completely, it's not that some people have represented it that way, but that's not the case. But it's often what you see with a young driver, don't you? You need to see this kind of transition from where whoever's behind them. Very often it's the father, but not always. They'll have kind of that entourage around them. They kind of have to transition as they once they get to the top level, and they kind of get a little bit more advanced in life into having their own kind of setup, shall we say. So I think that's probably helped make Max a bit more self-sufficient and know his own mind. So I think the next question that will be asked of him is how he performs under a sustained, intense title fight. That's the thing we haven't seen. And I always think of it of, at every level in racing, you're asked tougher and tougher questions, and more people kind of get selected out of contention, shall we say. It's, you know, each step you take. And then the last step is that step from kind of race winner to title contender, where he's got to go from the position he's been in the past few years, where he can snipe for the occasional win, to the point where he needs to be in contention for wins week in, week out. And there'll be racing situations he'll be confronted with where it's not just a question of, do I get ahead of this guy or does he get ahead of me? It's a question of that plus what does it mean for the championship. And that's something we've seen Lewis Hamilton be very good at in recent years, and judging when to fight, when not to fight, when to look at the bigger picture, when to look at the race picture. So I think that's the final test of Verstappen's mental strength, but I think he'll be equal to that, won't he? Well, let's have a look on the next category, teamwork. Mark, we'll start off with you on this. Now, we have touched on this area in the technical ability section. Verstappen's he's the main man at Red Bull, isn't he? So we've seen what he's like when he's got a team built around him. So how effective is he as that focal point? And how well do we think he's working in terms of galvanizing a team, pulling it together, the kind of Michael Schumacher effect of being the kind of the main man at the center of everything?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's at Schumacher's level at that just yet, but the team does gravitate towards whoever's delivering the performance, and obviously that's been him for the last few years. And so, yes, it does sort of operate around him, but that's not a strategic thing on his part, I don't think. He just goes in there and delivers his stuff, but it's his personality that helps in that. It's what Scott touched on before. He doesn't have the persona of a megastar. It goes back to this thing about he doesn't live in any other world than the racing world, and never has. It's just he's completely immersed in it and has been all his life. So he's been on the inside of teams all his life. You know, he comes from inside. His dad was running teams all of Max's childhood. Max has been right there among it all. So he doesn't have the attitude of megastar that needs to be accommodated. He just mucks in. He's part of everything. And like a Grand Prix for him is just like a kart race with more spectators. It's not really a big thing. So that, in combination with the magnetism that always follows that raw performance, it makes him a very easy, natural, unstressed focal point. And Red Bull is a good enough team that it can, you know, make full use of that. It's not a team that needs to be led by a driver. It can lead, but it's something that very comfortably accommodate each other. That team and that driver very comfortably accommodate each other and just have a very natural, unstressed way of working.
And I think it says a lot about Max's character and what he's like off track, that if you look at you look at someone like Sainz and Ricciardo and even Gasly, these are guys that ultimately, in one way or another, Max has negatively impacted their careers, because Max was the guy from Toro Rosso that Red Bull wanted to back, and Sainz eventually sort of, he needed to escape it, and Ricciardo couldn't get on top of Max. And okay, he had his doubts about Honda and everything, and he had a few dozen million reasons to leave for Renault as well. But Max played his part in that, and obviously Gasly couldn't get anywhere near Max and had his big chance blown. So in a few ways, Max is the worst teammate you could possibly have in Formula One, but he has a great relationship with all of those guys. You see the way him and Sainz behave around each other, and Ricciardo as well, and he has maintained positive personal relationships with these guys off track. And I think, given what he's done to them on track and what he's sort of done relative career wise to them, it'd be very easy for those guys to resent him and, you know, have that negative relationship. But I don't see any evidence of that, really. If anything, it's the opposite. He seems to be a very easy person to get off with. He seems to be a very easy person to get on with off track, but a very difficult person to beat on it.
Yeah, I think Sainz is an interesting comparison, because at Toro Rosso, that became very fractious, the two sides of the Toro Rosso garage. They took all sorts of measures to try and get that a bit more under control. And yet, once kind of parted, there's no kind of animosity between Verstappen and Sainz, which is impressive. That suggests that Verstappen's focused on the right thing, shall we say. And that's played a part in him basically becoming the king of Red Bull, because he's just so good. And, you know, they don't need an equal number one driver, because they've got this standout guy. The problem now is actually finding a number two who's close enough. You know, Gasly was just over half a second on average behind Albon, about 0.43 behind in qualifying the second half of last year. So, you know, they need to get a driver who's at the kind of Ricciardo level that's sort of within a tenth and a half, 2 tenths max consistently in order to actually deliver.
I think they can do that as well. I mean, maybe Mark's better place to comment on this particular point that I want to raise, but I don't really see any evidence that Max behaves politically within a team. So I can see why you'd want to maybe avoid going toe-to-toe with him, because he might be the ending of you. But Mark, what do you think? I mean, obviously the sign stuff was a little bit more controversial, but I don't really see Max as the sort to play games, but maybe I'm doing him being too much of a defender of him.
No, I think that's right. I think that's a fair point, Scott. I don't think he is political. I think maybe one step removed from him, Jos can be if he feels it's needed. But and I think maybe there was some of that going on at Toro Rosso on both sides of the garage. But he himself, no, I think he's confident enough in his own ability that he doesn't need to worry about making political moves. Yeah, I think it's just, you know, when you're trying to go up against somebody like that, it's usually the other side. It's usually the guy that's that missing tenth and a half that starts to create the problems. And that's what we've seen. And I don't really think that you can expect to just plug a driver in that other seat and expect them to race in, race out, compete on equal terms with Max. It's probably not going to happen. So you probably have to work out a different way of competing with the guy. And if you're only a tenth or so away, like say Daniel was or Sainz was, then yeah, there's probably other elements that come out, but it's not instigated on from Max's side.
There is a fine line between a kind of top driver making sure the team is fully behind him and all of the things that any driver would have to do in that situation, and that kind of point where you go a step too far and it does become political. But I think Max is kind of on the right sort of level. The Toro Rosso situation was an unusual one, really, a very unique one, because you had two kind of offspring of very experienced racing drivers, shall we say, who were both kind of there in the background, and it did play a part in across the board in the fragmentation. But I don't think we've really seen that in the same way from Red Bull, beyond the fact that basically Verstappen's qualities and the fact the team was getting behind him led to Ricciardo moving on. But that was a problem of Ricciardo not being able to beat him, I think, or knowing that it was going to be very, very difficult to that led to that happening. So I think teamwork, yeah, from what we've seen, yeah, there'll still be probably a little bit more to come, but yeah, he's working. He is dependable, and the guys in the garage can really get behind him and know he's the one who delivers.
There is one other thing I want to raise on the subject of teamwork, because it was one of the coolest things I heard last year, which was when I've mentioned before that what Max is standing is with Honda, but there was a brilliant story of when they went to one of the mass production facilities in Japan, and Max had basically like a kilometer long guard of honor from Honda employees. Like, they absolutely idolized the guy over there. And obviously he is the man who ended their podium drought and then their win drought. But he's getting up there now for that sort of, I think he might, he has the potential to forge one of those iconic relationships with a manufacturer. If he sticks around with Red Bull as long as his new contract suggests he will, and Red Bull and Honda have a successful partnership, I think that could go down as one of the big partnerships in F1 history.
So in that regard, the partnership with Honda, new Senna. There we go. We've gone.
Well, Honda boss Masashi Yamamoto told me that he sees Max as a young Senna. So the comparison, you know, we joke, but that is genuinely how he's viewed within Honda.
Yeah, and he's a driver in that caliber, isn't he? And I'm just surprised we managed to go this long into this podcast before making that comparison. Let's move on to experience, Scott. Now, as we said, Verstappen's 22. He's heading into his sixth season, 102 starts under his belt. It's an interesting question, the whole thing of experience, isn't it? Because he's a driver who has been kind of bred, almost literally bred, to be a racing driver. And he's had all this experience from Jos, who was a driver who had a lot of ability and quite a long Grand Prix career. But really, we only saw that ability that Jos had in very occasional flashes. And Jos is very aware of the failures in his own career, both of the mistakes he made and the failure of those around him to give him the right kind of grounding. And so with Max, we've almost got a driver for whom experience is a very, very different thing to everyone else. I don't think there's any driver on the grid who has had that same kind of grounding and training, not even someone like Lewis Hamilton, who was under McLaren's wing from a relatively young age.
No, I think that's correct. And I think the other thing that works in Max's favour is if you look at what he did in karting, for example, because obviously karting is where everyone begins, but I'm pretty sure, I think Max started karting when he was 4 years old, and he worked his way through obviously national championships and raced internationally. But when he stepped up to international racing, he did the usual formula, but he also stepped up into gearbox karts, which is, you know, the KZ1 at the time, the highest karting category in the world. And he's won the world championship at the age of 15. And there are guys in world karting who make professional careers out of it. The guys that go well into their 20s, 30s. And I remember David Fore, an Italian driver who raced for Tony Kart, which is has close ties with Ferrari now. He was in his 40s and he was still winning at the very top level. This is the exposure that Max has had from a very early age. And I feel that what he's gone through, the guys that he's gone up against, the level he's performed at, coupled with Jos basically telling him every mistake there is in the book that can be made, feels that Max has, it's not that he's shortcut the learning process, but it has been fast-tracked. It's almost like he's gone through the lessons everybody else goes through at double speed. And he has reached the point at 22 that it might take drivers another 4, 5, 6 years to reach.
It's interesting the way Jos, who ran him a lot in karting, kind of approached it. I remember doing an interview with Jos some years ago. I think this is probably before Max made his F1 debut. But I remember him talking about an example of when he was younger. He didn't say exactly when it was, but you could, in karting, put a little bit of oil on the clutch to try and get a better getaway. And Jos said, well, we didn't do that because I liked him to kind of come out the first corner in fourth, fifth place with some people to overtake, because I wanted him to have the challenge of overtaking. And he kind of talked about that as an example of how that natural ability was almost bred for overtaking, because he's been doing it for so long. And I get that the impression that for most kind of karting dads, for want of a better phrase, and I'm using a very broad brush here, it's all about winning, isn't it? It's all about having the success, winning. But I think Jos brought that extra dimension of, it's not just about winning, which Max did a huge amount, it's about learning as well, and putting yourself through this wide range of challenges and tests that you learn from. And I think that's really, really helped Max to be a man beyond his level of experience, certainly in terms of years. And you know, people talked about how quickly he got into F1, but he got into F1 that quickly because he was achieving. He moved out of karts probably, I think they said a year earlier than it was anticipated, because he did a year doing the shifters in the KZs and did some KF in Europe as well. And he was just winning everything. So it's like, well, I've completed this, so now we move on and we move into F3. And although he didn't win the championship in F3, he had a very, very strong season. And then it's like, well, ready for F1. And this is kind of perhaps where the political manifestation did come in that Max was hot property and Mercedes wanted him, Ferrari wanted him, Red Bull wanted him. But the Verstappens were able to parlay that into getting a race seat with Toro Rosso in 2015 and kind of accelerating his progress. And then they played a part again in that accelerated step up into the Red Bull Racing A team. So he's had I can't think of any other driver who's quite had the same education. How do you read the impact of that experience, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like Max has been the ultimate experiment of what happens when you combine nature and nurture, in the ideal nature and the ideal nurture. He's got the genes of two racing drivers, and you bring them up in a racing world, and the father adopts this guru-like place, this stance, based on his own experiences. So yeah, it could hardly be better. But it only works if the guy himself wants it, and that's what Max has always. It shines through the desire he has, and the way he just is immersed in racing. There isn't another world for him. Literally, there isn't another world for him. This is all he wants to do. And I was interviewing him once, and I said, you know what? It's early in your career, but do you ever think like what you're going to do late in you? What are you going to do when you retire from F1? He said, oh, no, I know exactly what I want to do. I said, go on, tell me. He said, well, what I'd really like to do is I'd like to get my own track, and I'd like to get a powerful car, but single-seater, not an F1 car, but something close. And I just want to pound around there all day and then look at the data and do a long run and then do short runs. So that's his idea of retirement, is to just blast around without any other cars. So it's not really a retirement, but that's how in love with it he is, and that's how driven he is to just to extract more and more and more from himself. That's all he wants to do. So, yeah, and I think you compared to earlier eras, you're also fast-tracked in terms of experience by simulation tools that we now have. So, you know, he's been born into that era, so he doesn't know any difference. So the simulation is he didn't get, say, 7,000 kilometer testing preparation for his F1 debut because of the testing restrictions, but it almost really didn't matter. And so, yeah, I don't think that you really have ever seen an obvious shortfall of information in his data banks that has made him do something stupid. It's just those type of rookie errors you haven't really seen from him.
Yeah, I think it's an important point to say that he clearly wants to do it. We've seen plenty of drivers that whether it's managers or karting dads, to use that phrase again, who have pushed them, who haven't necessarily wanted to do it and have kind of fallen by the wayside. But yeah, Max certainly has that. We should say his mother is Sophie Kumpen, who is a very, very accomplished karter, seriously quick as well. So that's the other side of the kind of Verstappen breeding program, for want of a better phrase. But I think the interesting thing with Verstappen is I remember his first Grand Prix weekend appearance, which was at Suzuka in 2014, he'd already been confirmed for 2015 in Toro Rosso. I remember in FP1 going to watch at the S's, the snake section, early in the lap. And that was the first time I think I'd actually seen him driving in person from trackside. And I remember straight away you could see how he was applying his experience. He wasn't just going out and trying to kind of rag a lap out of it each time. He was changing his approach to the corners, the way he was doing it, sometimes a little bit more aggressive, sometimes a bit more conservative, changing the way he braked, changing the way he was trying to rotate the car. And then when he went out for his second run on the second set of tires, you could see he kind of narrowed that window and learned. And I remember being really impressed with what he did there, just watching in that one 90-minute session. And sort of straight away, you could see this was a driver who's better prepared for F1 than a lot, because some drivers never get past that phase of just trying to go as quick as they can pretty much whenever they get the opportunity. And some drivers you know, the joke that you get with engineers is to say, well, sometimes he's quick, but the problem is he doesn't know why, so he can't do it regularly. And I feel Verstappen's got that understanding, which is what elevates. I mean, that, Scott, is what kind of elevates these great drivers, isn't it? They're not just fundamentally quick, but they've got everything, the determination, the intelligence, the experience, and that capacity to tie everything together.
Yeah, and if you look at let's take Hamilton as an example. He's a driver who, when he was up against Rosberg, for example, Lewis was always the one that was presented as the one that wasn't intelligent of the two, because Rosberg was sort of the cerebral driver and worked in different ways and explored every possible avenue to try and get on Hamilton's level. Hamilton was the natural talent and Rosberg was the thinker who used his intelligence to get there. But that, which was I guess true in relative terms, but it also helped create this image that Hamilton maybe wasn't particularly bright, and you know, Lewis might not be quite as much of a cerebral driver as someone like Rosberg or Button, but he still is able to pull together all sorts of different strands of information to get the best out of himself and to find ways to improve. And I think that's where Verstappen is. I don't think Verstappen's not an Oliver Turvey or an Alexander Sims, is he? Someone with that sort of level of education or intelligence that makes you think, oh, if he wasn't a racing driver, I can see him being an engineer or something like that. But Max is just someone, as Mark said a few times, the only world he operates in is racing. So in a race, from a racing point of view, I think if there's something Max needs to know to be better at driving, Max will know it, or he will go out of his way to learn it because he knows the value of it.
I think it's a question of that kind of realization that you have to leave no stone unturned. It's not necessarily, I think that thing about being a cerebral driver or not is less about intelligence fundamentally, more about, it's about approach, isn't it? And recognizing you've got to kind of do everything to kind of put yourself in a strong position. Actually, I think Hamilton, certainly in recent years, 100% has got on board with that, which is what's made him even more formidable. And I think, again, that's probably one of the things that Jos was able to really put into Max's mind from early on, that you've kind of got to do everything. You've got to have this interest in maximising everything, which is probably why what you said, Mark, about him wanting just to get a close to F1 car and just drive about and do your long runs and really kind of understand the car properly, why that's been hardwired into him and how much that will stand him in good stead. Shall we move on to our last section, which is less a comparison or an explanation of a specific facet, but more a kind of thought experiment, shall we say. We're going to start you off with this, Mark. So let's say when 2020 gets going, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton have cars with identical performance in all areas, which obviously won't happen, but completely identical performance profile of the cars, kind of equal opportunity. What do we think happens in that title fight?
That's just like the dream scenario, isn't it? That would be the most fantastic thing. I think they'd stretch each other out so tight in qualifying. It would be all but equal between them on that score. You know, sometimes one, sometimes the other, just depending on how the cards fell. In the races, I think Max would be more combative, more prepared to go for the ambush. We've seen him pull ambushes on Hamilton before. I think it was one Sepang very early in the race when Hamilton was chasing the championship. Max obviously, you know, banked on that and just pulled out the most outrageous outbreaking maneuver on him that required Hamilton's cooperation. And Hamilton, you could see him fighting with himself to, you know, do I just stop that and chop across him, or do I play the longer game? And he really had to struggle there. But Max will do that ambush. Could Hamilton do the same on Max? I think he'd be more circumspect. Hamilton's already admitted he doesn't quite know how to deal with Max wheel to wheel. He's not quite sure what he's going to do next. He's got into Lewis's head there. He's probably the only guy that has, really. So I think he would be more circumspect. He'd be able to pull the ambush move when, you know, the opportunity arose, but he wouldn't default to it. Whereas I feel that wheel to wheel Max would. There'd be other times when I think Lewis would use Max's audacity to tempt him into error, like China, I think it was 2018, when the safety car reset everything and the Red Bulls were on the new tyres and Hamilton was on old tyres but leading. There was easily enough laps left that Max was obviously going to pass Lewis. But Lewis tempted him into doing it at a place where it wasn't feasible. He just left a little bit of a tempting gap around the outside of a fast corner and then just edged him out. And that lost him the race and paved the way for Ricciardo to win. But I think you would see that sort of thing between them more often if they were able to just, you know, be in a race of their own every weekend. But assuming equal reliability as well as performance, I think Hamilton would just edge the title because of that.
Yeah, you almost feel that there might have to be a line in the sand moment in a battle between them where Hamilton doesn't see. So I can see there might be a big flashpoint that would occur. I almost feel like in the first season of this thought experiment, with all things being equal, Hamilton would prevail. But then you'd feel that Verstappen would kind of be ever more battle-hardened by the experience of that title fight. Often drivers benefit from having a kind of a failed title bid before they have a successful one. That's not always the case. Someone like Ayrton Senna won on his first serious title shot in 88 with McLaren, and Verstappen's perfectly capable of doing that. But I just wonder whether we're at the point now where you've got two drivers who, if you want to put it down to kind of the sort of pure ability, are on a fairly similar level, but Hamilton's just got that experience and that broad view, and just he's such a well-rounded, complete driver, still at his peak and probably still finding those little fractional percentage improvements before inevitably he'll go into a decline. Everyone does. That's unavoidable. He won't still be doing this at 60, will he? And so I wonder if there's that, we kind of see a crossover point at some stage. How do you see it, Scott?
Well, I'd like to think that someone's going to beat Lewis before he turns 60. I hope we don't have to wait that long before someone else finally wins the title.
I'm not completely ruling it out. He's quite the force of nature, Lewis Hamilton.
No, he is. But I do think with Max and Lewis, we've got a little bit of an F1 equivalent of unstoppable force meeting immovable object, haven't we? I think if anyone is going to topple Lewis while Lewis is at the top of his game, I think it will be Max. But I do take your point, Ed. I think there is a bit of sense and logic in the prospect of Max and Lewis going wheel to wheel this year, if we do go racing again, which hopefully we will. And Lewis just having enough of, you know, tricks up his sleeve and everything to combat it, to repel the attack. And then I think Max basically absorbs that information, because as we've already talked about, he is the world's greatest F1 sponge. And then I think he comes back with a few of Lewis's tricks added to his own arsenal, takes that from the start of the 2021 season. Because let's face it, because of the carryover now in chassis, if Red Bull hasn't missed a trick, Max has a bonus season now before the rules change and maybe the entire order's mixed up. So I think he's got two shots at it before the rules change. And I would be really surprised if Max doesn't now go into the new rules in 2020 with at least one world title under his belt.
Yeah, it's very, very possible. It's just fantastic, isn't it, when you get these, I call them generational battles, when you have the kind of established master of a specific time and then the up-and-comer. And sometimes we've been denied these battles by drivers retiring or other misfortunes. You know, we never quite saw Jim Clark go up against Jackie Stewart, for example. Ayrton Senna, Michael Schumacher was a battle we only sort of briefly saw. We never saw a full title battle play out between them because of the loss of Senna in 94. But that's why it's just so tantalising, isn't it, Mark? You've got, I'm sure, well, we know Lewis Hamilton's going to go down as one of the absolute all-time greats. He's already done enough to do that, no matter what happens from here for him. And Max Verstappen, I'm sure when he retires, he's going to be an all-time great with multiple championships. You know, it's impossible to say what will go on, but, you know, Lewis Hamilton could equal or even break Michael Schumacher's titles record. But, you know, with a fair wind, it's not totally impossible that someone like Max Verstappen down the line, you know, in 15 years' time could be in a similar position to be on the same number of titles. So we've got two incredible talents here. This battle would be, if it lasts a few seasons, could be one for the ages, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The generational turns that when you have you know, the pretender of obvious similar potential, yeah, they are the, you know, the generational turns. And ultimately, it always ends up in favor of the younger driver, but that doesn't mean to say that it happens now. It may happen 2, 3, 4 years down the line, and it's just, you know, it's just how nature works. You know, I think we've talked about it in the past. The lion, pride of the pack, who's in charge. You know, the king will be challenged maybe a few times, and the king will sort of bat him down, the pretender. But eventually, enough challenges, and the pretender will prevail, and that's what we're going to see. But we don't know over what timescale.
Yeah, let's just hope that we do get the two of them in good enough cars to have that battle. And then, of course, you've got drivers like Charles Leclerc who could get into the mix as well, who's a driver who's sort of still catching up to the level of those two, but as he showed last season, is very, very good. So I think overall, we've taken a good look at Verstappen and kind of explained why he's so good. Sometimes people like to sort of play down this before they see a driver consistently win, but the fact is, you know, he's never had the car to consistently win in, and he's won, what, 8 races in machinery where it's quite tricky to win. So, you know, that says a lot about where Verstappen's at. And at only 22, you know, he could be doing this in another, well, he will be doing this probably for another 15 years, maybe even more than that, which is just, it's terrifying if you're an up-and-coming driver wanting to get into F1 in the coming years that you're going to come up against Max Verstappen. So thanks very much, Scott Mitchell and Mark Hughes. We're going to finish up now and then get back to spending our time in isolation, just hoping for this battle between those two drivers and maybe a bit of Leclerc thrown in as well. Do check out therace.com and don't forget the hyphen. There's stuff written by all of us on there about all sorts of topics. We're finding no lack of things to write about, and certainly our time in confinement has been taken up with doing all sorts of interesting bits and pieces. So have a look there. Check out our YouTube channel, and of course, subscribe to this podcast, and we've got various other podcasts. The Gary Anderson F1 Show is out weekly. That's another one. There's a Formula E podcast, a MotoGP podcast. So there's loads to keep you occupied in this time of no motorsport. But the podcast will continue. We'll be back with another episode of the Race F1 podcast very soon.
If I'm walking the dog and see a nice little mud path with the right sequence of corners in it, I think, oh, I'd love the chopper down here. Chopper would be fantastic around this corner. Still now.